John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, we're getting closer to that opt-out deadline, and I tell you what, it is fast and furious. We're getting close to 60 players right now that have decided to opt out this season because of the virus, their families, weight, you name it. And the big one right now is Tre'Davious White, the cornerback for the Buffalo Bills. He's debating whether he's going to play this year. One of the best coverage cornerbacks in the league. Guys are going to be a Pro Bowler for many, many years. He's thinking about opting out. And, of course, we've got the wide receivers right now for the Miami Dolphins. You know, Albert Wilson, he opted out. So did Alan Hearns. And, of course, we know that Marcus Gilbert, the injured right tackle from the Arizona Cardinals, he opted out. But it has been absolutely crazy, and more to come today. But, I mean, yesterday it closed at about 53, and there's been about six, maybe seven, that have opted out. Also, news out of San Francisco, looks like, you know, they're still contemplating signing Ziggy Ansah, who at least has been down there taking his COVID test, and at least it looks like he's going to pass his physical, but they haven't got anything done as far as signing him. But they look like they are going to sign Deion Jordan, who's been with the Seahawks. Had a little suspension problem with that, but looks like he's going to be added so they get to replace DJ Reed on the defensive line. But let's get going into the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
What UConn is going to do, it's going to tell other programs it's okay to fold the tent, whether they're in as bad a shape as UConn or not. We will be talking about more programs saying, you know what, I can't go with my conference. I'm in a tough part of the country. And what's interesting is that the state of Connecticut, as you all of you know, has come out of the worst of it. It's not even a hot spot anymore, like Florida, Texas, and many other places. So this is a unique decision. It's not going to be a leading indicator that tomorrow everyone else throws up their hands. But this story will be continued over and over again as we work our way to September.
Yeah, UConn ended up moving out of the conference. They were in the AAC conference, and you know they were an independent, so only Notre Dame and UConn had the plans for unknown. Of course, Notre Dame's been gobbled up by the ACC, so they're going to be playing there, but UConn's decided not to play this year, and I guess that's going to be the first of others that are going to take the same thing. And so what Dave Benedict of the AD at UConn said is, receiving guidance from state and public health officials and consulting with student athletes, they decided that they're not going to compete on the gridiron this season. The safety challenges created by COVID place on the student athletes at just an unacceptable level of risk. And there's going to be others, as Paul Feinbaum did say, that are going to do that. But of course, as it stands right now, looks like the Power Five are going to try to power ahead and go ahead and do it. And we'll get into a little bit more of that in a few seconds.
Number two.
Oh, well, this time was a little different. Like, we connected, like, on a personal level. You know, I look at him as a big brother. You know, our bond is growing stronger every day. We talk almost every day, you know, about football, about life stuff. So just the outside football talk, I believe this year is what's different.
Yeah, DK Metcalf was on Q13 talking about preparing for his second season. And I'll tell you what, impressive enough that he was voted 81st in the league by the players for the NFL Network's top 100. You know, a good thing for him. And what you're looking at now is that his presence has all of a sudden, you know, given the Seahawks one of the better 1-2 punches at wide receiver in the National Football League. I mean, you look at the, you know, big, tall body, the 4.33 speed, the high jumping ability that he has. Now, you would have to think that, you know, he's a guy that could be on the way to me being a Pro Bowl, particularly with the fact that the players already recognize how good he was. You know, because say what you want, I mean, I know there's a lot of good rookies that surprised everybody in last year's draft who are receivers, but he's the one seeming to get the most attention right now. He works very well with Tyler Lockett. Certainly, Russell Wilson likes him a lot, and you can see his work ethic, and particularly being a second-generation NFL player, has really benefited him. So DK Metcalf on the rise with Seattle.
Number three.
What went into the decision was to afford us the best possible opportunity to be as flexible as we possibly can. And that was one of the reasons why, when we decided to go to a 10-game only schedule, Big Ten only conference schedule, is that we're hopeful that this builds an opportunity for us to remain as flexible as we possibly can. So, as you're aware, if something were to happen where we didn't start on September 5th. We have the flexibility to start even on September 12th or the 19th. And we have, because we have those open dates throughout the schedule and on the back end, we would be able to collapse some of those early dates to a later date.
So Big Ten announcing that they're the last of the five power conferences to say that they're going to be playing this year. And, of course, they're going to start it in the first week of September, which pretty well blocks the NFL's ability to maybe, if there's no college games on a certain Saturday, to move and flex some games into there. Because this season's going to go from, what, September 3rd all the way through the league championship game on December 5th. And so that may open up a few dates at the end of the season, or at least in December, where the NFL might be able to flex some games to Saturday. But the Big Ten, of course, announcing they're going to go with a Michigan-Ohio State game on October 24th. And so they're trying to just save that. September 3rd, the first game. And, of course, the last game, as we mentioned, December 5th. You know, and, of course, you have the Big Ten players doing the Big Ten United. But they weren't as bad as what we saw from the Pac-12 on the Big 12 United, because they're not asking for the 50-50 split, which was a ridiculous ask by that group. But again, you're asking for health and safety measures, and that is smart.
Number four.
Buttrey from the belt, kicks, delivers, swing, and a fly ball into left field. It's shallow. Over toward the line is Goodwin. He's there, and Goodwin makes the catch, and the ball game is over. The Angels win game one of this three-game series, a final score of 5-3.
Well, Justin Dunn struggled. Mike Trout hit a home run off of him. Albert Pujols hit a home run off of him. Bullpen did a little bit better than it was on Tuesday night. Actually went five innings, allowing two runs. And so the Mariners now losing their first game to the Los Angeles Angels 5-3. They're on a four-game losing streak right now. So to try to bounce back, they go back to the starting rotation right now with Marco Gonzalez, who pitched so well in getting trying to go for a second win. He pitched a great game his last time out. The pregame's going to begin at 5:30. The game's going to be beginning at 6:40, and you'll be able to hear it on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Number five.
Well, I said my agent and the front office, they're going to handle it. I'm worried about what I can worry about. I'm controlling what I can control. I answered the question. I'm not going continue answering it just because I'm not answering it the way that y'all want me to. Either accept the answer or keep it pushing. I don't want to get disrespectful, but that's the answer. Appreciate it.
Wait a minute.
Billy?
Jalen Ramsey not happy about being asked about his contract negotiations because they see if he can do an extension. And right now, getting a little bit mad about that. Of course, I mean, he spoke up as much as he could in Jacksonville and got his wishes and was traded to the Rams last year. But this one's going to be very difficult to get something done because, you know, the Rams are going to be tight against the cap next year, particularly if it's going to be $175 million. And, you know the price, you know, is going to be in excess of $16.5 to $17 million. Can the Rams satisfy him? Because Ramsey's going to probably want to come out of this as the highest paid cornerback in football. And of course, Guy's a great cover guy, but I mean, you saw what happened to the Rams. You know, part of their demise in the last 2 years is that they went for it. And of course, they went for it. They didn't win a Super Bowl. They got to the Super Bowl. But when they, you know, made the moves to, you know, move and pay Marcus Peters and get him and acquire him in a trade, you know, they had Aqib Talib, and then trying to keep that group all together, what ended up happening by going for it so strong, paying the $14.5 million for Todd Gurley on a contract extension, you know, they now had to lose 11 starters on defense in a two-year range, along with the top nickel guy that they had. And then they lose, you know, they had to trade away Brandon Cooks. You know, they had to let Todd Gurley go, and then three offensive linemen had to go. So a lot of things that had to change on the Rams, more things to come. And right now, you know, talent-wise, you know, they were only able to add like about two players, including Leonard Floyd at $10 million. Don't know how good he is. They were able to get Michael Brockers back, but in the end, Rams have to figure out a way to take care of Ramsey because, you know, I don't think they want to franchise him next year, but they've got to do something. Hey, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the linebacking group this year and how they look as we go under further review. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, one of the big talks has been how it's all going to sort out with the linebackers. And there's going to be some adjustments. You know, last year the linebackers were a big part of this group because what they had was they had Michael Kendricks, K.J. Wright, and Bobby Wagner, and they used more base defense with the three linebackers than any other team in football over maybe the last 7 or 8 years. And so now it's a matter, I think there's going to be some adjustments, but the team is so deep right now at the linebacker position. You know, they like what they were able to get last year in Cody Barton. You know, they know that, picking up Jonathan Brooks gives them more speed. And so how that's going to sort out, it looks like you got Barton and competing with Brooks to be the weak side linebacker. Then you have Bruce Irvin, you know, working with K.J. Wright at the strong side linebacker position. You got Bobby Wagner there. And so, you know, it's a good group. They have 7 linebackers that I think have a chance to make the team. But let's kind of review what the linebackers look and what goes. Dave Wyman, a former linebacker, talks about it.
I like the fact that Pete mentioned KJ off the top there, saying, you know, how good he played and what a great leader he is and everything. But, you know, he said getting all 4 of them on the field. I was going, wait, which 4 was he talking about? Because he didn't mention Cody Barton, but I think he mentioned Brooks, and I guess he was maybe talking about Bruce Irvin. And that would be the case if, you know, they were able to have him rushing off the edge. But they have him listed as a linebacker. And so for that reason, you know, I think there's going to be a couple of guys that are cut that, you know, and good special team players too. I mean, Ben Burkervin and Shaquem Griffin, those guys are demons on special teams. So it's tough at linebacker. There's no rookie free agents at linebacker. It's, you know, it's Cody, it's Jordan Brooks, Ben Burkervin, Shaquem Griffin, Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner, and KJ Wright. So it's really probably going to be one of the more interesting battles out there, where you're probably the most sound as linebacker, but it's also going to be interesting to see who they keep, and especially seeing that linebackers are usually, you know, the core of your special team unit.
Well, that's the thing, Dave. You think Ben Burkervin and Shaquem Griffin, you think they're facing an uphill battle to make the team this year?
Very much so. Yeah, I really do. And, you know, Shaquem actually showed his worth at the end as far as rushing the passer. You know, he got a sack in the playoff game, and he put some pressure, on Kyler Murray. So they finally started using him that way. So, you know, I guess that puts, in my mind anyway, Burkervin probably the first one cut if they do make cuts at linebacker. So they have 7 of them, which is a reasonable number. But you know, if they're going to count Bruce Irvin and have him, you know, sometimes play the Sam, you know, the strong side linebacker, then, you know, maybe they're allowed, you know, they're able to cut somebody else because of the versatility from him.
Yeah, but of course, I think what you're going to see is that's going to be a little bit of a shared position on the strong side with Bruce Irvin and KJ Wright. And so what I would anticipate is that depending on the formations, I mean, you're going to have, because again, what they want to have is speed, and Bruce Irvin adds speed. And so I think that he could start at the strong side in some games, and then KJ starting in the other games, because at some point, you know, when they get into down and distance, when they get into second and third down and passing situations, Bruce Irvin's going to put his hand on the ground and rush from the defensive end, you know, from the Leo position. So, and also I think what they want to do, because you have KJ and Bruce Irvin being, you know, in their 30s, they're going to be a little safe with them, trying to make sure that they don't overuse them. And, you know, I would have to think that in the old days, I mean, you know, KJ would probably play, you know, 89-90% of the snaps. And, you know, Bruce, when he was a strong side linebacker, he'd play 80-90% of the chance. That number is going to come down a little bit, but they have the ability to do that, and they can kind of mix and match, you know. And I think also, when they go nickel, I think it'll probably end up being, you know, KJ and Bobby Wagner as the 2 linebackers. Then, of course, they have the versatility if they need to, if they want to, you know, rush and put Jamal Adams in some positions to do it. He had 130 plays at linebacker last year with the New York Jets. And so that they have a lot more versatility than they had last year. I mean, last year, because of the fact that they questioned whether they had a pass rusher or not and found out that they didn't, they played cautious. They played more zone. They kept things in front of them. You know, they did blitz more. That's one of the things I give credit to Ken Norton Jr., because he probably was, you know, forced to blitz a little bit more than any defense in the last couple couple of years. Now I think things are all set up that they can go ahead and be able to do all that. So the big battle, once they get into the pads on August 17th, is going to be who gets to start at the weak side linebacker position. You know, because now I think that you kind of get to feel, and I don't know if you do, Curtis, that Jordan Brooks may have an edge over Cody Barton.
It seems like it, and Pete Carroll spoke to that the other day during his Zoom press conference with the media. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I think the spot that makes sense to us at this point, he could play either outside. He could play all three spots at linebacker. He's physically capable, and I've seen enough film of him. I mean, there's a lot of film of him playing all different spots. So I know in his background, any college guy that came to us, you know, you would love to see what we've seen in him. He started for 4 years and he's had thousands of snaps. So the flexibility is there. I think his clearest path would be, and might the most obvious path would be at the Will Backer spot. We'll see how that goes. We'll start him there and then see how fast he can grasp it and how soon he can become comfortable and we'll see.
John, we've seen rookies come in and have varying levels of success on the Seahawks defense. It seems like guys in the secondary get more playing time than rookies who are either on the defensive line or in the linebacking group. How do you think Jordan Brooks is going to be able to break through in his rookie season and really establish himself as a starter, maybe not day one, but by the time the season's second half rolls
around? I'll be honest. I think he can have a chance to start day one. I think that he was so advanced in his level of play in college. Again, one thing, you know, what's great about what Pete does is that he tries to make it simple as possible. So you rely on your instincts, your athletic ability. And from the weak side, I think that really bodes well for Brooks, because now he just has to instinctively react like a football player and try to make tackles. Because again, it's not like he's matching up against the tight end. It's not, because again, he's on the weak side, the strong side's matching up against the tight end. And so he can just concentrate and chase down the play and try to do it. And the fact that, you know, he is fast. I mean, I know he did in the 4.5s at the combine, but also, you know, there's times that I think he's been in the low 4.4s, and so that speed is something they want, because one of the things that's been one of the emphasis this year is going to be, you know, having more speed and violence on the field. They want more violent type hits, and I think he can provide that. And really, when you think about Brooks, he's very similar body wise speed wise to Bobby Wagner, and so I think that bodes well for him. One thing I know in snooping around is that you know, there's so many people that, you know, want to eliminate guys, get cap room and stuff like that. And of course, because I follow the cap so closely, it's like I said, no, that's not necessary. You don't need to do that. But I think what's good is that KJ Wright, I think, has got now a 98% chance of making the team. The only thing I think that would bounce him out would be if they do get a Jadeveon Clowney, because now they have to make some cap sacrifices. But I think that you can see KJ is so valuable for so many reasons. Number one, he really had a good season last year. Number two, you know, particularly at a time like this with the COVID-19, is that you've got to try to have good leadership to make sure that the young guys don't go out and make mistakes. I mean, you know, from the standpoint, the dedication and with KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, Bruce Irvin, they're not going to go out and misbehave. You know, they're going to, you know, take care of their families. If necessary, they'll quarantine themselves in the house, whatever is going to be necessary so they can be available to take this team as far as it can go into the playoffs and beyond. But I think KJ Wright right now looks like he's going to make the team.
I think so, too. And John, a couple of weeks ago, Pro Football Focus, they ranked the linebacking units in the entire NFL, all 32 of them. They have the Seahawks at number one, which I think maybe took some Seahawks fans by surprise. But when you look at the state of linebacking around the NFL right now, do you think that number one ranking is fair?
I think so, yeah, because, I mean, you've got two guys who have been to the Pro Bowl in KJ Wright and also Bobby Wagner, you know, and Bobby Wagner having potentially a Hall of Fame type career. Then you look at Bruce Irvin, you know, he's got 52 career sacks, and, you know, I think that everybody anticipates he's definitely going to be in the mix at strong side linebacker. I mean, you've got a great pick, I think, in Jordan Brooks, even though he didn't get the accolades in coming out by draft experts. But again, his fit here is perfect. And so I think that works out. And then, you know, next year, you know, the likelihood is Cody Barton will take a starting job, because I don't know if KJ Wright's going to be back next year. Don't know if Bruce Irvin's going to be back next year. Hey, but that's next year. You worry about that. But you know that they're grooming Cody to be a starter, and, you know, he's going to be a good one. So in the end, I think that is the number one ranking is, I think, flattering, but I think there's a good validity to it.
I think so, too. And I think it's one that a lot of Seahawks fans will probably point to throughout the course of the season when that linebacking group, you know, when they show they're very worthy of that ranking. And I don't think there's any challengers at this point across the league saying, oh, you know, maybe the Seahawks aren't number one. I think they're number one with a bullet.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle. Remember, you can always listen to 710 on your smart speaker or app. Coming up next, we have our Wednesdays with Wyman. Dave Wyman joins us next.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Time for our Wednesdays with Wyman. Dave Wyman joining us. And, of course, let's get to the newsy part. Looks like the first move made by the 49ers, it looks like they're going to try to sign Deion Jordan today, who is in along with Ziggy Ansah for a visit. And, you know, they need the defensive tackle help because they lose DJ Reed, a draft choice from a couple years ago, 2018. And so it looks like a former Seahawk Deion Jordan goes to San Francisco.
Yeah, you know what, John? I like both of those players. It's just a matter of just trying to extract the every amount of talent out of them before Ziggy gets hurt or Deion Jordan, you know, has, you know, some of his problems, you know, as far as PEDs and things like that. He just couldn't get a clean test. And, you know, I really, my heart goes out to a guy like Deion Jordan. So, I mean, he's kind of like Josh Gordon, where he's just hurting himself, mm-hmm. you know, and he's got a ton of talent. And my heart also goes out to a guy like Ziggy Ansah, because, you know, that's kind of how my career went. I had three seasons, John, where I didn't have some kind of a surgery. The other six, there was, you know, interrupted by injuries, and it's frustrating. But Ziggy Ansah is a really good football player. You know, and he had some flashes of, you know, things that he did last year. He was always hustling. But he even, I remember he hurt it, that shoulder was what the problem was. And I remember him just smashing a fullback from Minnesota on Monday Night Football with that same shoulder. So, like, he had no regard for his body, really. So you got to love players like that. So hopefully the Niners don't get the most out of those guys, because, you know, of course, that's the Seahawks' NFC West rival. And, yeah, it seems like John Lynch is doing a pretty good job down there.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, you know, he and Kyle Shanahan work so well together. Now, one thing I know in snooping around, you know, there's so many people say, oh, yeah, well, cap-wise, can they afford to keep KJ Wright? Which, of course, they can. And everything I hear right now, he's pretty well, as long as he's healthy. Obviously, that the injuries that he had with the shoulder and the surgery and all that stuff. But I just get the feeling that he's got a 98% chance to make this team.
Good. Well, and you mentioned snooping around. Just the way they talk about him, too, you know. I mean, look, I think the thing, he was wise to sign the contract that he did, right, John? I mean, mm-hmm. he's not making, you know, 12, 18, even though he might be worth that. But, I mean, it's going to get him an extra year around here. But, yeah, I just, you know, we've been speculating for a long time as to whether or not KJ is somebody that gets cut or traded or whatever. But I don't think so, man. He's too valuable to this team. And he had such a good year. And, you know, he just, the leadership, everything. And I know, you know, everybody talks about Bobby, and Bobby's the perennial Pro Bowler. But KJ Wright is like the glue guy. And also, last year, he was not part of the problem. Three interceptions, had a bunch of tackles. He was a guy who played as hard as anybody. And I thought he was one of the you know, bright spots on that defense last year. So, yeah, I'm with you, John. I think no matter what, he makes the team. He's on this team.
Yeah, and I think that's the right way to go, because I you know, just like him. And of course, he's even more important right now because he's got the you need the leadership with these young guys to make sure that they don't cost themselves a chance to go to the Super Bowl by going to going out and partying and bringing something back to the club. And KJ's not going to do it. Bobby Wagner's not going to do it. Dwayne Brown's not going to do it. That leadership is even more important this year.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, and that's the big fear, I think, for, so the veteran guys with families is that, they're going to do the right thing, but some of the younger guys may not, and they may break ranks and, possibly get the virus and spread it. So, yeah, you got to have a guy like KJ who's a leader. But we were talking about this yesterday, John. They've got technically seven linebackers, but one of them being Bruce Irvin is listed on their roster as a linebacker. But yeah, I'm with you on that one too, where I could see them keeping all of them, really, because if you count Bruce Irvin as a defensive end, you've really only got six linebackers, and Ben Burkervin and Shaquem Griffin being the guys, on the bubble. But one guy we haven't talked about a lot, because I've been talking so much about Marquise Blair. I know your breakout player, John, was L.J. Collier, which I agree with could be. But Cody Barton, he learned a lot last year. But, in that Carolina game, he could have had two interceptions in that game. If one ball wasn't tipped and the other wasn't offline, if the quarterback throws it to where it's supposed to go, he's got a pick. He's great in zone coverage. He had a couple of little problems of getting turned at the line of scrimmage, which he'll learn from that. But Cody Barton is a guy that's going to be fighting his way on the field. And we've talked so much about Jordan Brooks, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, that this is a guy also that is really going to be fighting. And, don't be surprised if all of a sudden Cody Barton is a guy that's getting a lot of snaps out there at linebacker.
Yeah, but don't you get the feeling that the way you kind of hear it, there seems to be more buzz for Jordan Brooks than there might be for Cody Barton?
Yeah, absolutely, because, he's a first-rounder, and, they're talking about the speed and everything. And it is really going to be interesting to see how they use Jordan Brooks because, man, that guy, he's kind of like the two safeties where he's like a guided missile. I mean, he's got so much speed, and, yeah, I broke down some film on him for Seahawks.com, and a couple of the things that he did, he's got some real good savvy. But Cody Barton, I always say about Cody that, since last year anyway, that he probably had one of the better camps that I'd seen for a rookie since Lofa Tatupu. His understanding of zone coverage and what the opposing quarterback and offense is trying to do to them is, was superior. I mean, he was doing things that you see out of 5, 6, 7 year veterans. So, yeah, I would say don't count Cody out. But that's even though it's not an area of need or an area of improvement, linebacker is going to be really interesting to watch, at the end of the year to look back and see, okay, you can understand if Bobby Wagner plays 100% of the snaps like he usually does, but who are, how do they fill in? How does KJ fill in? Do they use Bruce Irvin? Does Ben Burkervin make the team? And then how about Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton? So it'll be interesting to watch that battle play out.
Yeah, and I think that I know Curtis brought this up, Curtis Rogers at Pro Football Focus actually rated the Seahawks linebacking corps as number one in football.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good. Tampa, they've got a good group. Pittsburgh certainly has a really good group. But, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, and especially with the way KJ Wright played last year. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. They certainly got, two really good veterans. But then, you add a first-rounder and a second-rounder in there in Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that's going to be good. Now, the look right now on the defensive line is that, they've got the four guys right now that are going to be Leos. And again, they need the five techniques, either L.J. Collier or Rasheem Green to step up. And naturally, they're still going to be looking for more players if there's a chance to get a good one.
Yeah, well, and like we've talked about, John, usually they have a late defensive tackle signing, but as you pointed out yesterday, a lot of those guys are opting out. So, you know, what you're looking at, because, you know, bigger guys sometimes will have sleep apnea and, you know, things like that, which with the coronavirus is not good. But, you know, I'm just looking, you got Jaron Reed, you got Puna Ford, and you got Brian Monet, who was a guy who they really like, kid out of Michigan, who was a free agent last year. And so that might be what you're looking at, unless maybe DeMarcus Christmas makes a big run. He was from the draft last year or a couple years ago. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they're able to find a defensive tackle, because it seems like, John, every year they come in with a, you know, late signing defensive tackle, whether it's a guy like Al Woods or whatever, and they've always done a really good job with that, but not many of them out there.
No, and of course, I mean, the ones that are out there is Damon Snacks Harrison, who's contemplating whether to play this year or not. You have Tim Jernigan, who has his contract fell apart with Houston. You have Mike Daniels, who would, you know, John Snyder would like from the Green Bay Packers. But the problem is you now have three teams, you know, Chicago, Buffalo are among them as far as, you know, losing guys that have opted out. Minnesota's in that group. In fact, they even made a trade and it fell apart. But those three teams are going to jack up the price of any of the defensive tackles who want to play.
Yeah, well, and I'm just looking at just kind of planning on. And again, I remember talking to Ken or listening to Ken Norton. He really liked Brian Monet and what they got out of him last year. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's not. It's maybe a little thin. You've got some guys that are sort of unproven. And, you know, it's funny. People have talked about how Puna Ford kind of had a disappointing season last year. And the only reason that happened is because Justin Britt called him a Hall of Famer in camp last year. And it's like, yeah, this guy's playing like a Hall of Famer. And everybody's like, whoa, this Puna Ford guy must be really, really good. And then Puna goes out and has, you know, a good year. It wasn't great. But I think everybody was kind of disappointed. I'm like, well, I think that's because Justin Britt called him a Hall of Famer in camp. A little bit premature, John.
Yeah, that would be a little bit premature. But, of course, our Wednesdays with Wyman, with Dave Wyman. Hey, thank you so much, and let's talk again at 4.
Okay, John. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. And, of course, you can check out these. We got one thing that's going to be coming up really special, and it's going to start in 2 weeks once they put on the pads. You know, Seahawks training camp is here, and it's time for two-a-days on 710 ESPN Seattle. Starting August 17th, join us each weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable from 11 a.m. to noon featuring myself and our Seahawk experts. And then it'll be your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon at 710sports.com. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all-access pass to Seahawks training camp with two-a-days starting on August 17th. Coming up next, we're going to catch you up on the National Football League Behind the Lines. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Well, more opt-outs are continuing in the National Football League. We're up to 58, but the big one now that's starting to get everybody kind of concerned is Tre'Davious White, the cornerback, Pro Bowl cornerback for the Buffalo Bills. And I can tell you right now, if he ends up opting out, the AFC East, and now this would help Seattle a lot because it'll help the teams in the NFC West that play the AFC East. I mean, think about the damage that's been done. And again, I don't want to call it damage because, again, these are all family decisions. I think that everybody respects who's opting out and all that stuff. But think about what happens now because you've got four games against AFC East teams. The New England Patriots, who's lost about, what, six starters in free agency or trades and let the, you know, Tom Brady go down to Tampa Bay. They have eight guys who have opted out, including, you know, four guys you might consider starters. Then you have star Lulele, defensive tackle, who's making over $8 million a year with Buffalo. He opted out. Now, if White joins him, their defense is not going to be as good. Defense is not going to be as good for the New York Jets because you know, they traded away Jamal Adams here to Seattle, and then you know, C.J. Mosley stunned everybody by opting out. So now they're down two Pro Bowl linebackers, and Miami, they're down two wide receivers because Allen Hurns and Albert Wilson ended up opting out. That's a lot, I think, right now, Curtis, that you know, may open the doors for, you know, Seattle and all the teams in the AFC, NFC West to do well against those AFC East teams.
Yeah, that division getting hit hard by the opt-outs. And if Tre'Davious White opts out, that would be the biggest name, I think, so far of all the opt-outs. He was an all-pro last season for the Bills, one of the best corners in all of football. John, I'm looking on Pro Football Talk, and Mike Florio raises the possibility that the Bills could try to persuade White to not opt out by offering him an extension right now. If I'm the Bills, though, and White wants to opt out, yeah, he would miss this season, and there's obviously a lot at stake. They're expected to compete. But you would get him for an extra year at a much cheaper rate than if you extended him now and sort of forced him to play against his will. I don't really see why extending him now would be in the best interest for the Bills other than to win in 2020.
See, that's just Mike Florio not getting it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, doesn't he realize the cap is going to be $175 million? And that's the floor. We know it can probably be higher than that. But it's like, you know, saying is I get him a contract extension within a day because he has to be done by 1 p.m. tomorrow, West Coast time, and at a time right now that, you know, the Bills are going to be pressed against the cap because what they've done, they've been very aggressive in free agency the last 2 years. You know, they've got to start to look to see if they want to pay Josh Allen. And now, I mean, you want to do something with White just because, you know, he has the possibility of opting out. It's like, Mike, what are you thinking? Or are you thinking? I mean, it's like, you know, these things aren't done by a click of the fingers. I mean, you have to go and, you know, work these things. And, of course, there was no anticipation that, again, getting a deal done. It's like, how many deals have gotten done? What, four?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Mike.
There's been barely any movement on that front. Another interesting opt-out was in the NFC West yesterday. That'd be 49ers receiver Travis Benjamin. He opts out of the 2020 season. He hadn't played yet for the 49ers. He was going to make his San Francisco debut in 2020. But, John, that's a team that is light on wide receivers now with Deebo Samuel out for a good portion of the season. They've got Brandon Ayuk coming in, the rookie. They've got Kendrick Bourne there, but they don't have Emmanuel Sanders anymore. He went and signed with New Orleans in the offseason. So, John, 49ers offense, they've got George Kittle, obviously, but he's in a contract battle with that team. Their wide receivers kind of thin right now. Are you expecting San Francisco's offense to kind of take a step back in 2020?
You have to think that as a team, because, again, you go to the Super Bowl and you lose, and you saw it happen here, there's going to be a drop-off. And, again, you know, you have that hangover from the Super Bowl, and I think you can see their experience. And the fact that, you know, Deebo Samuel ends up getting the Jones fracture when he was down there in Nashville training with his teammates, you know, the 19 guys on offense that were training. And then Richie James, you know, suffers a broken wrist. He's a wide receiver and returner, and so he's going to, you know, he's going to be out for some time. And Samuel right now is not going to be ready for the opening of the season, so he's going to be on PUP. So, you know, they lose Samuel, they lose Emmanuel Sanders. You know, that's a lot to lose at the receiver position. That's going to be affected. And again, you know, now they're down two defensive linemen, you know, because DJ Reed, who had some playing time last year, he's out for the season, torn a pec, and then, you know, they traded away DeForest Buckner. And so, yeah, I think there's going to be a little bit of a drop-off on offense and defense.
Another guy who has kind of floated the idea of opting out, but he so far he's ruled against it, and that was Broncos pass rusher Von Miller, who did contract COVID-19 back in April. And Miller, who does have a pre-existing condition, he suffers from asthma, you know, puts him at risk, John, throughout the course of the season. Are you surprised that Von Miller is considering still playing in 2020?
No, because I think he loves to play. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's a Hall of Fame caliber outside linebacker, loves the game of football, understands that there is high risk, but I never anticipated that he would quit. I mean, you know, certainly has to be in the cards because, you know, he... But, you know, now that the fact that he's had the virus, I don't know if he's got built up enough immunity to be able to, you know, have be successful in being able to, you know, fight it through again. But no, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, this guy loves football and is a great football player.
Interesting article on ESPN.com today. Bill Barnwell is projecting future Hall of Famers for all 32 teams. He separates them into the likely category, in the running category, and work to do. That's for each team. Mm-hmm. And for the Seahawks, there's two guys he has in the likely category, which he puts in the 70 to 99.99% range, and that is Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. I don't think there's any debate as those two are probably, just based off the trajectory of their careers, have a good shot at Canton. I think Bobby may be a better shot than Russ at this point, but there's still opportunity for Russ, obviously, to cement his case for the Hall of Fame. In the running, he's got that 40 to about 70%. He's got Jamal Adams as a potential Hall of Famer. John, I mean, he's only been in the league for three seasons, but the way he is, he's got two Pro Bowls, an All-Pro nod across his first three seasons. It's kind of hard for safeties to make it into the Hall of Fame. There aren't a ton in there. We've seen Kenny Easley, Steve Atwater, Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu in recent seasons. You think Jamal Adams could potentially have a Hall of Fame career? Maybe a little too early to tell.
No, I think that he's on path right now. Now, obviously, if something happens to him and he's not able to play, or you know, his career ends early, that would kill the chances. But no, I think he's on path right now to be a, you know, Hall of Fame candidate of the future, because what you're looking at is, and again, I know it's early to say this, but I agree with Bill, because you know what Bill is saying is that you know, he's the best safety in football, or one of the best safeties. You know, he's kind of a generational type player now that you look at the way he's evolved. And you know, with that in mind, with a lot of good safeties in this league and kind of a resurgence of the box safety who can do a lot of different things. No, I agree with Bill.
Bill's got some interesting interesting nominations. For the Falcons in the likely category, he's got Julio Jones, which I don't think is too outlandish. He's also got Matt Ryan in the likely category. I know Matt Ryan, he's been to one Super Bowl, didn't win it. He's got an MVP under his belt, but I feel like Matt Ryan in the Hall of Fame, that would look kind of funny, wouldn't
it? No, I think it's a possibility. Because, again, it's not, you can't rule out the chance that maybe he's not going to, he goes again. I think he needs to go to be able to do it. But, you know, no, I think that he's a borderline, because, you know, he's had such success, and he's always one of the better stat quarterbacks in the league. He's got one of the better comeback quarterbacks in the league in games. No, I think that he deserves consideration. Hey, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we go four downs with Sean Salisbury. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.